Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
And I bet you weren't expecting that. Good evening and welcome to Live on Air. And as you heard, we have a brand new sponsor. I am delighted to welcome EmeraldConnection.net as the sponsor of Spain's only Irish programme, that is Live on Air. Nice to have your company today. A little bit of information about EmeraldConnection.net. It's a website devoted to all things Irish, things that are promoted on the website that would be of interest to people in Ireland and indeed Irish people here in Spain and other parts of the world as well. It's a relatively new creation and there's a lot there. So do have a look at EmeraldConnection.net in your own time. What's coming up on the programme this evening? Well, let me tell you, we have the usual bits and pieces in there. We have a lot of information about teaching English as a foreign language. Adrian Allen will join me because I know a lot of Irish people, a lot of people who are native English speakers, go to various different countries across the world and teach English as a foreign language. So I thought it would be interesting to get some information on how you can do that because I know a lot of people think about doing it, but not always do it. Irish science fiction is a thing, and it's a very big thing, apparently. Jack Fennell is going to join us on the programme to talk to us about Irish science fiction and indeed things that were written in the past that you may know about and may be familiar to you today. Peter O'Dwyer makes a welcome return to us. He wasn't with us the last 2 weeks for the very simple reason anything that was happening in relation to Brexit was across the world on the news wires anyway, and we all knew about it. And on this programme, we like to bring you the information that you wouldn't ordinarily hear, and that's why Peter is such a fabulous resource. So it has gone quiet, thankfully, on the Brexit front. So Peter's going to come back to us and just give us an overview as to what's been happening in Ireland over the last couple of weeks there. All right, so we look forward to chatting to Peter as well. There'll be some famous Irish birthdays that we'll be looking at that are happening this week as well. And don't forget, as always, if you would like to contact the programme, I would absolutely love to hear from you, be it good, bad or indifferent. And you can email me at any time, ger, at tre.radio. So let's have a look at the birthdays, because we like to do that and tell you whose birthday is coming up. Here's a name that is familiar to you, I'm sure, but it will become more familiar because I intend to do a lot more about this lady. Kate O'Brien, a writer, was born in County Limerick in 1897 on this very day, the 3rd of December. So I look forward to doing a little bit more about Kate on the programme over the next couple of months and years, hopefully. Friday the 7th, Austin Stack was born in Tralee, a revolutionary and politician. He was born in 1879. If you ever went to a GAA match in Tralee, you may have been in Austin Stack Park. And finally, Mike Nolan from Bucks Fizz won the Eurovision Song Contest back in 1981. I didn't know he was Irish, but apparently he was born in Dublin in 1954. So we say happy birthday to Mike Nolan, 64 years old, next Friday. And finally, the 8th of December, James Galway. He's not a flautist, he says. He doesn't play the flout. He plays the flute. So he's a flutist. He was born on the 8th of December, as was the author John Banville. So there we go. Just some of the famous Irish birthdays that we are looking at and celebrating this week. And happy birthdays to all of those. Let's take a bit of music right now. Here's a great band called The Walls, officially from County Clare, from Ennisdiamond. That's the area that The Walls come from. Here's a song called Goes Without Saying. It is Talk Radio Europe. It is the Irish programme Live on Air. Good evening and welcome, in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
You can moan, but no one's gonna drive you home. This time you're on your own. For a change, in the dark, watch out for the broken hearts, the hanger and the empty parts. In the rain, it's a curse. Daddy says you have to work. He can't pay for college books or holidays. He's back at home. Don't ask him where the money's gone. If it was ever what you didn't know. When you're lost inside the dance, you're in a different world. The music swirls, your body twirls, and you forget about it all. Until the curtain falls, until the lights come on, and we all applaud. It goes without saying, as the saying goes, it's a wicked world, everybody knows. You had it all, but you lost control.
Walls. That's a song called Goes Without Saying. A nice lively start to the program on this Monday evening. Going to take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'll be talking science fiction with Jack Fennell.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
During the week, a little article caught my eye that the plot behind one of my favourite series of movies, Back to the Future, which we'll all be watching on television over the Christmas, no doubt, may have been predicted or may have been written about 100 years ago or thereabouts. And it caught my eye, as I said, and I went and I looked, and it turns out that there's a brand new book titled A Brilliant Void. It's published by Tramp Press, and it's edited by Jack Fennell, who joins me on the phone. Jack, good evening, and thanks very much for talking to me.
How's it going, Jerry? Thanks a million for having me.
Not at all. Delighted to do so. Now, before we start talking about your fascination with science fiction and all sorts of things, tell me a little bit, if you would, about A Brilliant Void.
Well, A Brilliant Void is the latest volume in Tramp Press's Recovered Voices series, right? So this is where they go back, they look at Irish authors that have been neglected or forgotten or just need a little bit of love, you know? And right, they bring out new editions of their works. They've done Dorothy McCardle's novels most recently. They had a collection of short stories by Maeve Lavin. They just decided, do you know what? We know that there's that stuff out there, and they had just heard of my work, so they got in touch with me and they said, would you be interested in putting together some old Irish sci-fi in a collection for us? And I don't think I've said yes to anything quicker in my life.
Yeah, the quicker way, if you could spell it quicker, you would have done it, I suppose. But there you go. So where did you start with this, Jack?
Well, about 10 years ago, I kind of decided that I wanted to do a PhD, and, you know, I was looking around for a topic, and I had always kind of been a science fiction fan myself, so I thought, I know there's a few Irish sci-fi bits out there. It's bound to be kind of a small-ish area. It'll be a handy-out topic to discuss. And then when I went looking, I discovered that there were scores and scores of things that nobody had ever heard of. And it became a much larger project than just the PhD. So.
Right. So when you said you were looking for a PhD, you had done a degree, and when you did the degree, were you kind of thinking, well, what am I going to do now? And then you went on to do this, or were you working in a different area?
No. That was basically it. I was off. I did my undergrad and I did my master's. Then, like, for about a year, I was doing odd jobs here and there and what have you. And I was kind of thinking, you know what, I mean, I'd love to add another string to my bow if the chance is there, kind of thing. That was how I got into it.
Right. And your interest in science fiction, it began when exactly?
I don't know. I mean, like, since I was a kid, you know, since I was a gossin watching Star Trek on the TV,
right,
you know, when I was like 6-7 years old, I suppose. I've been into it for as long as I can remember, really.
And the likes of Star Trek, years ago, as you say, when you were younger, has science fiction moved on? Because now we're trying to predict the future with a lot more, you know, gadgets and gizmos and things like the internet and stuff. Has it gone mad?
I would kind of argue that it's not really about predicting the future at all. It's just about making up a future that sounds believable to us now. I mean, because if you go back 100 years or something, like, they all thought that we'd be traveling around in hot air balloons and that kind of thing. You know, like, I mean, they didn't anticipate, like, what the world would look like now. So, you know, you can't tell that kind of a story anymore. You have to kind of keep updating the future as you go along.
Tell me about some of the stories that are featured in this new publication, Jack.
We start off in the 1830s with William McGinn, a Cork man, and his own short story, which is a sequel of sorts to Frankenstein. Okay. And we go right the way up through into around 1960 with Cathal O'Saunders' story, The Exile, which is about a young fellow who emigrates to the moon to seek his fortune.
Right. Okay.
And it kind of meanders all over the place in between. We've got stories about dinosaurs. We've got stories about hairy babies. We've got stories about like Bond villains, basically, before there was a James Bond. All kinds of stuff. There's something for everybody in this.
And tell me about the book and the story that made the headlines, that it predicted the plot for Back to the Future.
It's a story involving a time paradox. You know, this idea that if you go back in time and change something, then, you know, you'll cause a logical contradiction that'll set up a loop, kind of thing. This story, it's called, well, in Irish it was called An Cianadóir, and I translated it as The Chronotron. You know, I had to come up with a science fiction-y name for the invention.
You made it up.
Well, not entirely. I mean, it was suggested by the original. And basically, it's about a guy, a mad scientist, who decides that what he's going to do is he's going to go back in time and prevent the Civil War by dropping a nuclear bomb on London in the year 1920.
Okay.
And it all goes disastrously wrong for him and for the unfortunate who's tagging along with him, who narrates the story. It sounds kind of grim, but it's actually very, 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 very funny. It was written by a guy named Tarlac O'Hid, and I'm very happy that we got permission from his family to put it into the collection, because I really think it needed that light touch.
Was it written in Irish?
It was, yeah.
Okay. Now, you've said that Tramp Press were interested in doing this, and they heard about your work. So tell us a little bit about what you do, about the work you do.
It was all academic work related to that research. I was publishing bits and pieces in journals here and there, and then Village magazine wanted to do a kind of a big splashy article about Irish science fiction, and I was quoted quite a bit in that article, and I think that's how Tramp came across my name to begin with.
And have you written a lot yourself?
I've published quite a bit, like all academic stuff, you know. Like I published a book based on my PhD thesis in 2013, and then after that it was just essays and journal articles and that kind of thing. So nothing really kind of out in the public imagination anyway.
And is this what you do for a living?
No, for a living, up until this week, I was an adjunct lecturer at the University of Limerick.
Okay.
So basically just teaching everything and anything, because Irish sci-fi is a very narrow speciality.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not going to get to teach a lot of classes on it.
You said up until this week, so what are you at now?
Yeah, it's a part-time position. Like, so that has come to an end. That will be coming to an end tomorrow. Then after Christmas, we'll see what happens. So, you know, for the moment, I'm kind of up the wall with Brilliant Void and associated things. So, like, I'm going from bookshop to bookshop at the moment.
Okay, so you're doing signings and appearances and media and all that.
Oh, yep, all that stuff.
And do you like it?
Yeah, it's something different anyway. Running around the country like a blue arse fly, you know.
There doesn't seem to be a whole lot that it would phase, you know, to be honest, but there you have it. And is there a significant interest in science fiction in Ireland?
I'll tell you what, I mean, there definitely is, because next year we've got the World Science Fiction Convention coming to Dublin. And this is something that rarely takes place outside the United States. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was in Finland, and then, like, years and years ago, it was in Glasgow, but it's like once in a blue moon kind of territory that it ever leaves the U.S., and it's coming to us.
How did we get it?
In 2019. By campaigning and politicking and you know, going to everyone else's events and kind of plamassing them, with plying them with drink, and then eventually there was a vote, and Dublin was selected for 2019. That's going to bring a huge influx of sci-fi fans and authors and, you know, possibly a couple of actors and what have you, from all over the world into Dublin for that couple of days in August. And then a couple of days after that, there's another event happening in Belfast. So people will be coming. They'll probably stick around for a few days and then travel the 2 hours by train up to Belfast and go to another one there. So, yeah, I mean, there's considerable interest in it.
Who did the plamassing and the plying of drink to people? And is there an organization?
Yes, there was a committee. A committee was established. I won't name names because there's a lot of effort and a lot of people's time went into it. Basically, like, I mean, every global sci-fi event for the last, like, 5 or 6 years has had an Irish contingent at it, offering, you know, like oatmeal cookies and that kind of thing, you know, like traditional tastes of Ireland to try and get people on side. You know, it was a lot of work over a lot of years made it happen.
All right, well, listen, this sounds fascinating. When does that come to Ireland?
That comes to Ireland, I think it's August of next year. It usually happens in August of 2019.
Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you. A fascinating subject, and I suppose when I'm not a huge science fiction person, I like a certain amount of it, so I wouldn't have been in the know, as you know, as we say. But fascinating to hear that there is such a big interest in it, and delighted to hear that Ireland is going to feature so prominently next year as well. And as you say, it can only be good for the country with people coming in, and indeed the sci-fi fans in Ireland not having to travel, which is lovely as well.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I wish you well with A Brilliant Void, which is published by Tramp Press and edited by Jack Fennell, that we're just talking to. So, Jack, thanks a million for taking the call. Safe travels around the country. Enjoy it, and we look forward to whatever you come up with next.
Thanks a million, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Rest for a while now, the night is young. The time is short and the road is long. Tell me a story, I'll sing you a song. For tomorrow, the road will be calling us on. Don't let your journey be stopped at the start. There are times when your feet have to follow your heart. But the faster you travel, the less you can see, and the more that you have, rest for a while now, the night is young. The time is short and the road is long. Tell me a story, I'll sing you a song. For tomorrow the road will be calling us on. Look for the house with the smile at the door, where we sat round the table, danced on the floor, found warmth at the fire, and came back for more. There was grass on the chimney and a lock on the door. So rest for a while now, the night is young. The time is short and the road is long. Tell me a story, I'll sing you a song. For tomorrow the road will be calling us on. So let the reel have its turn and the song its refrain, and here's to the day when we all meet again. And long may the sun shine wherever you are, but you'll still need the darkness. Rest for a while now, the night is young. The time is short and the road is long. Tell me a story, I'll sing you a song. For tomorrow the road will be calling us on.
lovely song. I dug that out a number of weeks ago to play it on the programme, and I just didn't get a chance, so I saw the opportunity today and I put it there. Colum Sands, a song called The Night Is Young. Well, the programme is still young. We're just through the second part of it. We're going to take a very quick break, come back to me just after that, and I will be talking to Peter O'Dwyer about Ireland and the B word.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
It's been 2 weeks since we had a chat with Peter O'Dwyer, the senior business reporter with the Times Ireland. And we normally talk to Peter about Brexit, but there was so much happening over the last 2 weeks. The whole world knew everything about Brexit. So we said we'd give it a little rest. However, I think it's time to find out what's been happening over the last wee while in Ireland. Peter joins us again on the phone. Peter, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
And as I said, it has been quiet over the last wee while, but everybody knew what was happening prior to that. Now, I know that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was in Templemore in County Tipperary at a Garda Síochána passing out last week, and he had some comments on Brexit, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, the last couple of weeks have been quite busy, I suppose, generally in terms of Brexit, but very, very quiet on the home front. Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney and all the other members of government have really just stayed away from it. They've been reluctant to say anything. They're giving Theresa May the room that she needs to try and get her Brexit deal over the line when that comes up to be voted for. So they're really keeping their powder dry in it and just trying to say as little as possible. He was in Templemore at the Garda passing out last Friday, and there the Taoiseach said that he reiterated the government stance that they are not planning for a hard Brexit scenario. But at the same time, he did say that if it were to come to pass, there would be a risk that it could increase the incidence of cross-border crime. Mm-hmm. He mentioned stuff, along the lines of smuggling, different things that could come to pass if a hard Brexit did happen. But he said that there was no policing contingency plans being put in place for that scenario at the same time, which I suppose is in one way just sticking to the government's line. But also, it would be very difficult if he starts talking about contingency plans for a hard Brexit now,
yeah,
while May was looking to get her plan over the line. So he's probably keeping his powder dry for that reason as well.
Realistically, I presume there is planning going ahead in the background.
Well, I mean, the government, even behind the scenes, are adamant that they're not. They're quite adamant since day one that they haven't been planning for this. You would have to imagine that there is some level of planning going on, because mm-hmm. we're so close now to the potential of a no deal that it would seem foolish not to. But certainly it is one of the best kept secrets, or open secrets, I suppose you could say. Even the officials, when you speak to them privately, they all insist that it's not happening. But okay, I suppose if you just use your common sense, you'd have to imagine that there is something being cooked up.
And no more than Ireland, I know that the European Union themselves have stuck to a very straight line and they haven't made much of it, giving Theresa May as much space as they can. But Donald Tusk did have something to say over the weekend.
Yes, he was at the G20 meeting in Buenos Aires in Argentina, and he said quite plainly that it's either May's deal, it's no deal, or it's no Brexit. Take your pick, basically. He was saying that there would be no return to the negotiating table on this part of the deal. Obviously, if May's deal gets over the line in terms of the withdrawal agreement that has been agreed between the EU and the UK, then you get down to the nitty-gritty of the future relationship. But mm-hmm. on this part, with the withdrawal agreement, he said that there would be no more negotiation. He did suggest that the EU would be open to extending the Article 50 deadline to push Brexit past, March 2019, when we're expecting it to happen. But other than that, he basically says, it's either this deal that's on the table or nothing at all.
And a question for you, Peter. What do they mean when they say no Brexit, like no deal, no Brexit? What do they mean by that exactly?
I suppose they mean have a referendum and decide that you want to stay. I mean, they're not pushing that. They're not encouraging.
Right.
I don't think they're not doing what they once did to Ireland when we voted in referenda in a manner in which the EU wasn't delighted with and just gave it back to us to have another go off it to get the right answers they saw.
Right.
To be fair, they're not pushing it in that direction. I suppose they're just pointing out the blindingly obvious that if their stance is that the deal won't be renegotiated, the only options are to go with that deal, to leave with no deal, or not to leave. And it's up to the UK to decide which they'd like.
Now, obviously, you would be in contact with your colleagues in the Times in London. But when you're in contact with your colleagues here in Ireland from other news outlets, organisations, what are their thoughts on whether there will be a deal or no deal?
I think everyone's opinion is much the same at the moment, whether they be in Ireland, England or anywhere else across Europe, that at the moment it doesn't look likely that Theresa May will get this deal over the line. She seems to be still significantly short on numbers. There's dozens of her own Tory MPs that have now said that they won't vote with the government. The DUP, upon whom she relies, have obviously said that they won't be voting for it. So, I mean, today she's going to have another go at trying to sell it to MPs. She's going to say something along the lines of, you know, reiterating the line that the UK will be free to strike ambitious trade deals with the rest of the world if this deal goes through. She'll, I suppose, be looking not to draw attention to what Donald Trump said last week, which was that this deal looked like a great deal for the EU and not great for the UK. And the Home Secretary is on board with Theresa May. He's going to say that one of the big issues of the referendum, the idea of free movement and immigration, that this deal would allow free movement to come to an end and for the UK to draw up its own immigration policy that would suit it best. So they're still on the charm offensive. They're still looking to convince MPs, but with 7 or 8 days to go before the vote, she still looks quite a way off at the moment.
All right, Peter, thank you very much for joining us this evening on the programme, and we look forward to hearing from you again very soon.
Great, thanks, Ger.
That is Peter O'Dwyer. I spoke to him just before lunchtime today. Peter is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland.
It's coming faster now. And I never thought I'd be here. You're holding out on me. Strip of lace in your collarbone. Think I caught you catching me. Space off. Thank you.
thought that would be kind of appropriate to play just after we spoke to Peter about Brexit. It comes from Bell X One, great Irish band, a song called Careful What You Wish For. Yes, indeed. Anyway, nice to have your company on this Monday evening. It is live on ERA on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Let's take a look at some of the events that were happening on this week throughout history in relation to Ireland. On this very day, back in 1956, there was great celebration because Limerick-born runner Ronnie Delaney won his Olympic gold in Melbourne. That was for the marathon, wasn't it? In 1990, on this day, the inauguration of President Mary Robinson as President of Ireland took place. It was on the 4th of December, so we celebrate it tomorrow. Back in the year 2000, Ireland reluctantly agreed to a 6-month European Union-wide ban on the feeding of meat and bone meal to all farm animals, including pigs and poultry. 2006, on the 4th of December, staff at an equestrian centre in Mullingar. I'm laughing because I know the answer. I know the end of this. Anyway, Mullingar, County Westmeath. They returned to their workplace prior to a planned Christmas party, all going well so far, and they discovered Gus, a newly arrived camel from Morocco, had munched his way through 200 mince pies and cans of Guinness. And it was in 2009 we got some sad news. The wonderful Liam Clancy of the Clancy Brothers passed away on the 4th of December 2009. Wednesday is the 5th of December. It was on that day in 1921, after lengthy negotiations, the British government gave the Irish delegation a deadline to accept or reject the Anglo-Irish Treaty. In the words of Lloyd George, rejection would have meant immediate and terrible war. Sounds like something that Trump would say, isn't it? Thursday, the 6th of December, the following day, 1921, representatives of the Irish government appointed by President Éamon de Valera and those negotiating for the Crown signed the Anglo-Irish Treaty, ending the Irish War of Independence against England. Michael Collins later said, "I have signed my own death warrant." And he wasn't wrong there. 1922, on that day, the Irish Free State, Saoirstáit Éireann, came into being. It was the following day, the 7th of December in 1922, the 6 counties of Northern Ireland opted out of the Free State. A little Brexit of our own back in those days. Saturday, the 8th of December 1980, Charles Haughey and Margaret Thatcher met in Dublin to agree to consider the totality of relationships between these islands. That's what it was called, the meeting. Back in 1999, on that day, the 8th of December, the Irish government implemented a 32-year-old law banning the sale of turkeys, ducks and geese at livestock marts. And finally, it was in 1973, on the 9th of December at Sunningdale, British Prime Minister Edward Heath and the Irish Taoiseach Liam Cosgrave and representatives of the Ulster Unionist Party, the Social Democratic and Labour Party and the Alliance Party of Northern Ireland signed a historic agreement to set up a Council of Ireland. 2005, on the 9th of December, President Mary McAleese and Queen Elizabeth II met in Northern Ireland. According to President McAleese, that historic event could clear the way for an unprecedented state visit, which it did. No British monarch had made such a trip to the Republic since George V visited Dublin in 1911, a decade before partition. So there you have it. A lot happening this week in history relating to Ireland. Let's take a lovely piece of music right now from the man that we mentioned, whose anniversary we mark this week. The wonderful Liam Clancy, who used to sing with Tommy Makeham and indeed his own brothers, the Clancy Brothers. But as I told you, he died on the 4th of December in 2009. Here's a beautiful song from the very man himself. It was recorded live, actually, on an American TV show, but it's lovely. Here's Liam and the Gypsy Rover.
Gypsy rover came over the hill, down through the valley so shady. He whistled and he sang till the green woods rang, and he won the heart of a lady. Ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-doo-da-day, ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-day-dee. He whistled and he sang till the green woods rang, and he won the heart of a lady. She left her father's castle gate, she left her own fond lover, she left her servants and estate to follow the gypsy rover. ah-dee-doo-da-dee, ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-dee-dee. He whistled and he sang till the green woods rang, and he won the heart of a lady. Now our father saddled up his fastest steed, and he roamed the valleys all over. He sought his daughter at great speed, and the whistling gypsy rover. Ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-doo-da-dee, ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-day-dee. He whistled and he sang till the green woods rang, and he won the heart of a lady. But he came at last to a mansion fine, down by the river Tlady. And there was music and there was wine for the gypsy and his lady. He is no gypsy, my father, she said, but lord of these lands all over. And I will stay till my dying day, that whistling gypsy rover. Ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-doo-da-dee, ah-dee-doo, ah-dee-day-dee. He whistled and he sang till the green woods rang, yes, and he won the heart of a lady.
Late Liam Tansey, whose anniversary we mark this week, tomorrow in fact. He died on the 4th of December 2009. Beautiful song there called The Gypsy Rover. Back in just a moment, we are going to be talking teaching English as a foreign language with Adrian Allen.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Teaching English across the world is something that a lot of native English speakers do, and a lot of Irish people travel to far-flung places like Dubai and to places in Africa, and they come to Europe and they do a lot here in Spain. I know a lot of people that do it. Now, you don't have to be a teacher to teach English as a foreign language, but you do have to do what they call a TEFL course and learn something about it. And I thought, seeing as so many Irish people are here in Spain doing exactly that, that we talk to somebody about what's involved in it. And Adrian Allen is a director of the New English Centre in Malaga, and he joins me on the phone. Adrian, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. How are you?
It's a pleasure. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Teaching English as a foreign language. People have been doing that for decades, but it's really taken on huge numbers over the last number of years, hasn't it?
Yes, it's gone into another dimension altogether. There was something called the Bologna Agreement, which meant that everybody across Europe, when they finished their university degree, they must be able to present a certain level of proficiency in another foreign language. And of course, because English is the language of business, everyone chooses English. And it's meant that there's been an enormous increase in the number of people who are looking for English tuition.
Now, as a person who is fairly recent to Spain and trying to learn Spanish, but I find it very difficult at times, and something that other people do as well, because the Spaniards love to be able to speak English in many areas, and so they really, when they hear that you're an English speaker, they like to talk to you in English, so it's kind of difficult. It's one of those things, and the Spaniards have taken to it probably a lot more than other countries, haven't they?
The Spanish market is enormous. In fact, Cambridge University Press, that produces a lot of the materials that are used for teaching English, have made special Spanish-speaking editions. So you can imagine how that reflects on the increase in the number of Spanish speakers wanting to speak English. Yeah, it's a very large number of people.
For somebody who may have been thinking about this, what's the best way to do it?
There are different levels. A lot of people look online and they find that they can economically become prepared for classroom teaching through online courses. Mm-hmm. The next step up is to do a presential course where you actually have to attend a school which prepares you in TEFL techniques. And most of them run for a month. Okay, it's a full-time course. Now, anyone who's thinking of doing this should take two things into account. First of all, an employer is going to be much more interested in someone who's looking for a job if they've got practical experience behind them. And that's something which they can say they've got if they do a presential course. If the person does online course, they're not going to have that advantage when it comes to applying to for a job. And the second thing is that for your personal satisfaction, if you're prepared to teach English by a professional who knows what he's doing and can show you how to manage the classroom, you're going to be in a much better position to advance in your abilities in the classroom in the long run. Most of the courses run from 9 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon. There will normally be teaching practice included, and then there'll be written assignments in the evenings.
When you've done the month, then, what are the job opportunities? Do you, as a centre, an English centre, do you help students to find work, or do people come to you and say, look, I'm looking for somebody to teach English? What way does it work?
Normally, centres that prepare teachers, like ourselves, we have the immediate environment where we work in, because we know all of the academies. And because we've got quite a good name for our teaching techniques, they're very happy to pick up on people who have graduated from our courses. When you've got that, you can look in the immediate environment where you happen to be. And here in Spain, for example, we're in Malaga, you'll find a lot of openings. Most people don't take more than a month to find a position. Then there's the aspect of going further abroad. Now, if you want to go to other more exotic countries, then places such as TEFL.com advertise positions, and there are literally thousands of them.
Right.
It's a matter, you can almost take your pick. A lot of places will interview by Skype, right, and that's where you can shine if you've had some face-to-face training, because you're much more eloquent when you start talking about how you would give a class.
Yeah? Okay.
The employment prospects are very bright.
Okay. Two questions for you, or one question in relation to finances. Firstly, to do a month course with an institution or a centre like yourselves, what ballpark are you looking at investing, number one? And then number two, what's the likely salary for somebody teaching English in Spain?
Let's deal with number one first. The price range that you're looking at, for example, our courses run at €1,000 for a month.
Okay.
We're accredited by a group called Accreditat. The way they work is that they're not as on top of the provider, such as ourselves, which means that we can offer more economical prices. Other places, which offer Trinity or Cambridge Celta, have quite a large amount of money that they have to pay out to the provider because of the Trinity and Cambridge. So you're looking more in the order of €1,500.
Okay.
If you're looking for something a bit more glamorous like Trinity or Cambridge, you're probably talking in the order of €2,500 to €3,000 per month.
And when you start working then, what's the average salary of somebody teaching English?
Very varied. If you want to work, for example, here a lot of schools are looking for people to go in by virtue of the fact they're native speakers and do supplementary classes. Now, these don't normally pay that well. You're looking at €10 an hour or something like that. If you work for a private school who, for example, are sending you off to work in the case of Malaga, in the technological park, you could be looking at €25 an hour. So it's very varied. There are also people that pay a salary, which means that you'd be looking at about €1,250, €1,300 for working 24 hours a week.
Okay.
Which isn't bad.
So there is a good return on it. I know people, I'm in my 50s, I know some people that have been, you know, my own age thinking about it. So is there a specific age group? I know a lot of students, when they finish college, they say, yep, I'd like to do that and do a bit of traveling. Is there a particular age group that you would see more often?
Not so much, no. As you say, there are many, many people in the 50-year-old range. They've more or less bagged their career. They're finishing up. And they want to do something more exotic and do some traveling. And there's also a lot of younger people, you know, in their 30s, who have been doing stressful jobs, and they're looking for something more relaxing, even if they have to take a little bit of a cut in the income. And then there's young people who are starting out, and they're eager to travel and see the world.
I could ask you probably 1,000 more questions, but I won't. Have you got a website that people, if they're interested, could take a look at and maybe get some information?
There's a website which is thetefelcentre.com.
Yeah.
We also have an academy which is associated to the TEFL Centre, which is called the newenglishcentre.com. And they can be as young as 3-year-olds up to, well, retirement age. So there's a bit of everything.
Of course, in Spain, the retirement age could be anything from 50 to 80, couldn't it?
Everything, yes. Yeah.
All right. It's been enlightening talking to you. I wish you well. I know that the New English Centre is going well, and we wish you continued success. And thanks very much for talking to us about teaching English as a foreign language on the programme today.
It's been a pleasure.
just close your eyes and sail away listening to that, couldn't you? The beautiful sound of the Fury Brothers. And Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Absolutely lovely. That is my lot for today. I sincerely hope you've enjoyed the program as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you and presenting it. Now, we're into December. It's hard to believe that today is the 3rd of December. It really is. But we are looking ahead at our Christmas program because I will be on air on Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. And I will be with you on New Year's Eve, the 31st. And I have an idea. I've put bits and pieces together already. However, if you would like to send greetings to anybody, if you're listening in Ireland and you've got somebody abroad in Spain maybe here or anywhere else, do please let me know. You can email me, ger@tre.radio, and just tell me who you'd like me to mention and I will do that for you. Also, if you're here in Spain and you've got family at home and you want to send greetings, we can do that. And you know what? We can even arrange a telephone call with you and we can get you to do the greetings yourselves. If you would like to do that, I'd be more than happy to do so. All right, so get in touch with me. Tell me what you'd like for those two programs particularly. And you can email me, as I said, at ger@tre.radio. Good luck now, and thanks very much for listening. Thanks also to our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra, who has been absolutely invaluable right through. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my colleagues here at Talk Radio Europe for the assistance and the support that they give on a daily basis. And of course, thank you to our brand new sponsors, emeraldconnection.net. Keep an eye on that because there'll be a few bits and pieces that you'll be interested in there as well. Until next Monday, from me, Ger Sweeney, have yourself a fabulous week. Look after yourselves and each other. Going to leave you with Johnny McAvoy and a song called The Spanish Lady. Bye-bye now.
As I went out through Dublin City at the hour of 12 at night, who should I see but a Spanish lady washing her feet by candlelight? First she washed them, then she dried them over a fire of angry coal. In all my life I ne'er did see a maid so sweet about the soul. Whack for the toodaloo, the laddie, whack for the toodaloo, the lay. Whack for the toodaloo, the laddie, whack for the toodaloo, the lay. As I came back through Dublin City at the hour of 8:30, who should I spy but a Spanish lady brushing her hair in the broad daylight? First she brushed it, then she tossed it, on her lap was a silver comb. In all my life I ne'er did see a maid so sweet as the Spanish lady. I've wandered north and I've wandered south through Stony Batter and Patrick's Close, up and around by the Gloucester Diamond and back by Napper Tandy's house. Old age has laid her arms on me, cold's a fire of ashy coal. Oh, to where, oh, where is the Spanish lady, neat and sweet about the soul? Whack for the toodaloo, laddie, whack for the toodaloo, lay. Whack for the toodaloo, laddie, whack for the toodaloo, lay. Whack for the toodaloo, laddie, whack for the toodaloo, lay. Whack for the toodaloo, laddie, whack for the toodaloo.